At 80 years old, I had sold my company, my corporate company, making thousands, hundreds of thousands of computer bags for HP and Dell and other companies. And I decided I really wanted to work for the working woman. I wanted to work for the woman that had more taste than money. And if she had money, we'd sell to her too. We wouldn't turn her down.
Hi, I'm Sylvia Beckerman. Join me today as I talk to an extraordinary woman who is changing the world by making a difference in her life and the lives of those around her.
My name is Francine Farkas Sears. I'm delighted to be on Sylvie and Me today, and thank you for inviting me and thank you for having me. It's an honor to be here.
Francine, thank you so much. It's an honor to actually have you here because you sort of are, maybe some would say, a busy woman. But what I want to do is I want to go back to a kind of an intro because you have been called gritty, funny, as a child, and who was never afraid really to take a step forward. And when I say that, I want to start by saying, I believe one of your first jobs was in a salon. You were a receptionist.
Yes.
And you did something. You thought that, considering that the women going to the salon were basically considered a captive audience, you might add something to the business there, something like Poochie-like dresses for them to see and sell them. And you talked the owner into the fact that that was not only a good idea, but that was a great idea. And that was from your first job.
Oh, that was after the babysitting job where I organized a group of young girls my age and boys to babysit. And I was the ringleader. And it was my first CEO job.
Neat.
Yeah, I think we were making something like 50 cents an hour, and I got 5 cents. So, you know, that was my first moment of an important bank account. And I lived in the Bronx, and there were so many people in our building that we could babysit for. Then we went on to, as I got older, and I had a summer job in a fantastic beauty salon that probably took care of at least 50 or 60 women at a time. It was called Flair, and it was on the Grand Concourse in the Bronx. And it was the age of the Poochie dresses, as you mentioned.
I remember them.
And I convinced the owner to give me $1,000 cash and go down to 7th Avenue and buy dresses. There were these sexy little fitting dresses and Poochie-like prints, and we sold them for about $100. Well, suddenly the next step was he gave me $5,000. And the step after that is we put them in all five salons. And suddenly my dad said, well, when are you going back to school now that you've done this? I said, school, the business world needs me. I mean, how could I go back to school? This is important. I'm serving a purpose. This is going to be an emporium. My dad started in the Apple business and he became Apple King. Well, I could be copy king, queen. The buyers from Alexander's department stores heard about our dresses because their woman was saying, why don't you carry these? Why don't you carry these? So not only did the buyers come and buy our dresses and try and figure out where we were, who our source was, but so did the CEO of the company. And he came and he offered me a job. And he said, would you like to come into our fashion department? We really need someone like you to stimulate our buyers. I said, well, I'm going to South Africa, but when I come back, I'll come and talk to you. I'd love to. In the meantime, what he was unaware of was that his son was trying to date me. And so all that was sort of converging together. It was kind of an interesting thing. I did go on to South Africa, and I didn't get engaged too many times, but in South Africa, a girl from New York was really a popular young lady. And my dad's family had migrated from Russia and Poland, and he had gotten them out of the troubles there and sent them on to South Africa. So he never had a chance to visit them. So I was sent instead. and along with to go to the wedding of his of one of his nephews. And she was about his daughter who was getting married. She was lonely on this trip around Europe, and she invited me to come with her, and we were the same age. And so since my dad couldn't go to South Africa because he was in the apple business and he knew the apples would not grow on the trees if he left America, so I was sent as his representative. It's kind of a cute story because as an American girl, I was pretty popular and I wasn't bad looking in those days. I was a lot younger and kind of, you know, I had a lot of chutzpah.
Chutzpah. It's a real trait.
And then one of the young men that I was dating said to me one day, we were sitting at his polo club. I had never known anything about polo. I knew a little bit about softball, baseball, and punchball, but I didn't know very much about polo. And we're sitting at this polo club drinking ginger beers. And he said to me, what can I do to make you happy? I said, if we could convince my father to come to South Africa and see his family that he sent from Europe many years ago who survived HARS, the Holocaust, it would be pretty wonderful. So we made up a story together and we said we were getting engaged. And my uncle called my father and said, you know, Ben, your daughter's thinking of getting engaged. He was on the next plane. It was a little fib with a big result.
That's
he saw
fantastic.
His sisters and his uncles and his cousins and his brothers that he hadn't seen in over 40 years. Of course, I never married that poor guy, lucky for him. And and my dad met his whole family, and it was pretty wonderful because he was responsible probably for their surviving some awful times. So that was one of the moments. Then I did come back eventually after almost a year of having fun. And I went to Alexander's for an interview, and I was interviewed by the advertising department. Two great guys. One was the director and one was the creative director. And they said, oh, we have to, we want you here so badly, but we have to share your position with another department in the Bronx with our fashion director. I said, okay. So I drove my little white Buick convertible to the Bronx to meet this lady by the name of Mrs. Davis, and she rightly had an office under the escalator stairwell, and somebody came out to get me and to bring me to meet her, and I was pretty excited. I was dressed in my best tweed suit, and I walked in, and this woman said to me, when I say sweep, you sweep. Those were her first words. So women aren't always those that are sponsoring other women.
No, they're not.
No, so I said, well, not. I wasn't aware that this was a custodial position, but I know how to sweep. I mean, I grew up, you know, vacuuming every day when I came home from school. So I then left and I went to a phone booth. There were still phone booths that day. And I called Mr. Leader and I said, I'm really sorry. I can't accept this position because this is not a nice person. And I really would love to work for you in advertising. Oh, give me your phone number. I'll call right back. Okay. And I was in the phone booth. He called back. He said, we're hiring you ourselves. We just got the budget and you're going to make $125 a week.
Okay. You have to start someplace.
The beauty salon, I was earning over $500 a week as a young girl with all these dresses I was selling, uh-huh. $1,000 a week. And I said, okay. Okay. So I took the job. And I opened the first photo studio for Alexander's in the Queen store. And the models would come there. And the outside photographers they used to use that were overcharging them. Was very angry with me, and I love doing it. I absolutely love doing it. And the president of the company, who was the man that I eventually married and fell very much in love with, he was kind of awkward and shy and brilliant and so much fun. So we were a unique couple because we were nothing alike, but we had the same goals. So anyway, I did take that job, and I then ended up opening their own photo studio, and I saved them $25,000 the first 6 months. And they gave me, I think, a $25 raise. So I was up to $150. I mean, I was really swinging, you know, it was pretty wild. And eventually, I was lucky enough to move on. And eventually, after a few other stories in between, we got married. I was fashion director by that time, appointed by my father-in-law, who had hired me. Okay. And he said, "You're going to marry my son." I said, "You're out of your mind. Okay, you're really brilliant and wonderful." That's what he had first said to me a long time before. But he was absolutely right. And we had an incredible marriage of adventure throughout the world because we had such synergy together. And he was just brilliant. He was kind of the Marco Polo of retailing. And he believed I could do anything. Somebody believes you could do anything and you have some talent. As a girl, you could do anything.
And you did.
I could do anything. So between two men in my life that really believed I could do it, they gave me the launching pad to do it. It was a great time, but I also felt because I was married to Sandy in the beginning that there would be considered nepotism. And he said to me one day, "You know, you would be a great stockbroker." I said, "I would." He said, "Yeah, and you'd make a lot of money too." He didn't know how rich he was. Turned out that I left and I left Alexander's. I understood what he was saying. And I became a stockbroker. And I became 1964 to 69. I was the top producer in an office of 100 men. I love Wall Street. I love the sex of the stories. I love aerospace. I love technology. I loved electronics. It was the new age. And being a woman, it was pretty wonderful because at one point they resented you, but they also loved you.
Yes, they did.
Figure you out. You know, why are you working like this? Look who you're married to. And then about a few years later, the board of directors of Alexander's asked me if I would come back and handle the new public offering since I was on Wall Street for those years. And I had worked to bring other companies public. So I came back as fashion director. And that was stellar. That was really, really stellar. And it was a great, great time in my life. And we just did incredible things. The girl from the Bronx that used to go to the store to buy her clothing when she went to school, and her mother would buy her an outfit and her aunt would buy her an outfit. And I didn't marry a doctor according to what my mother wanted, but it was okay.
It was okay. So now, because you talked about your place on Wall Street, and there are a couple other places where you became one of the top or one of the only women. In 1972, China was finally reopened. Nixon had negotiated and reestablished trades. 26 Americans were invited to come, only one of which was a woman, Francine.
Hail democracy.
First American businesswoman invited to China. In 1978, you founded Fabrique Limited, which was a major player in the design and manufacturing of functional cases for electronics, laptops, and so on. Right. In 1980, you've always been dedicated to women, and we'll go into that in a little bit more, regarding Planned Parenthood. When the government stopped funding for women in need, you took action. You became a committee member of the New Haven Planned Parenthood and sold Bouquet Garni to women's medical care across the United States. In 2005, you became a member of the Permanent Commission on the Status of Women. In 2009, you became a member of the Women's President's Organization and received the 50 Fastest Growing Companies Owned by a Woman Award from the WPO. In 2010, Congresswoman Rosa L. DeLauro of Connecticut acknowledged you in the U.S. Congressional Record on September 29th, 2010, for your accomplishments in business and the community. And 2019, regarding social justice, you received the Diversity Award from the Urban League of Connecticut for your leadership, service, and dedication to inclusion in your community. So you have done nothing. I want to talk to you about a number of things that are very dear to your heart, which are also dear to mine, but dear to yours in different ways. One of them is, I want to just mention the Girl Scouts of America.
Thank you. I appreciate you
mentioning that. Tell us what your connection to the Girl Scouts of America is.
Well, you know, it's wonderful that I'm on the board of WPO, of accomplished women whose businesses run anywhere from 2 million to 200 million. But where we really have to make a difference is young girls. I was a Girl Scout in the Bronx, and it was such a privilege to feel so American amongst immigrant parents. The Girl Scouts meant so much to me. And now we won the agreement and the contract and the design and manufacturing of accessories for the Girl Scouts of America. We go to the Girl Scout conventions. We encourage these girls the Girl Scouts encourage these girls to learn everything from selling cookies and bookkeeping and keeping a record of them. We're even making the little cookie cart where they can put 12 or 16 boxes of cookies in their cookie cart, and like little grandmothers roll these little cookies down the street and sell their cookies. They're learning so much. They're learning how to mountain climb. They're learning how to do statistics. They're learning how to accept each one, no matter the size, the color, the background, the family. We're doing something that will enable their futures. We're starting them at 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, up to 18 years old. We have to encourage these young ladies to be the future that they can be, to be whatever they can be and whoever they can be. I had the opportunity, and as you said, we had that chutzpah gene. But at the same point, we have to take the girls that are not so sure of themselves and give them skills and opportunities that will guarantee their future, at least give them the launch.
And give them, let them build their confidence. And it's so important to take young girls at a young age and be able to instill in them self-worth, self-esteem, and confidence within themselves, to be able to believe in themselves that anything is possible.
It's true.
Anything is possible. Look, you got a salon guy to sell Pucci-like dresses, and you were the CEO of the babysitting club at a very young age.
You had to start somewhere. So we're trying to make stylish items that really bring the Girl Scouts, without losing the dignity of the brand, into 2022. And that's where we are, 23, 2024. We're making beautiful socks with little hair bows and scrunchies and backpacks and hats that they're proud to wear, really to wear. Recently, we're making a backpack that I'm so proud of that I've made over 50,000 for HP for. We're making 1,000. So we started off with the Girl Scouts making a little waste bag of 800 pieces. And people said to me, "You, Francine, are going to produce 800 pieces?" I said, "Yes. Today we're making over 150 styles for the Girl Scouts of America."
Well, I have to back up a little because I might have just slid over just a small part of what you are doing now, which is Francine Collection, which you started just a couple of years ago. Employs women to foster a creative, supportive work environment. You started this at a time when most people would say, why do I need more? I've been successful. Where am I going? I'm in my 80s. Why do I need to start something again? My question is, why do we need to stop?
Yes.
And you're providing women with something that they can use from going to work to going to dinner. And that's why you're able to say, okay, I know what these little girls, what would make them feel special? What would make them feel
stylish and
stylish funny. And give them confidence and not just stand out with a Girl Scout little uniform, but you're bringing them into today's world. And it's so important.
What we're trying to do is give them the pathway. They can take it or not take it. We're trying to give them the style, the ideas, the concept where they're proud to be a Girl Scout. I was proud to be a Girl Scout, but it had fallen to a place where you had to modernize the designs a bit. At 80 years old, I had sold my company, my corporate company, making thousands, hundreds of thousands of computer bags for HP and Dell and other companies. And I decided I really wanted to work for the working woman. I wanted to work for the woman that had more taste than money. And if she had money, we'd sell to her too. We wouldn't turn her down. And believe me, women are the best buyers in the world. They love a bargain and they love style and they like a great knockoff. So oh, yes. Working woman. And then I want to work for, at this age and stage of my life, I want to work for companies that are doing better for the world. So for companies that are giving back. So we're working with the Red Cross. I was honored to become part of the Tiffany Group of the Red Cross to encourage blood donors. We're designing some products that we're showing to them to give to blood donors. The Girl Scouts, of course, are giving back. It's a matter at a stage in your life, you do what you can. I also try to stay fit. It's really important. I have a son. His name is Benjamin. He does a yoga retreat called Lux Yoga. And he does these retreats in Montana now. We used to do them in the south of France. From a villa. He's now moved to Montana and I can't wait. In July, I'm going to the Lux Yoga Retreat with about, for the yoga retreat that is yoga your mom can do. And he probably gets about 15 or 20 people. It's a luxury ranch and it's beautiful. And I just love that my kids are all doing something of their own. One daughter is in the restaurant business, that's Georgette. And today she's opening with a French company, Restaurant Mars. She's quite fabulous. I have another daughter in real estate and art. And I have another son in technology. And he was just introduced by his mother to a young lady who he got engaged to. Mom knows best. So yeah, my life is a little busy.
Just a little.
Just a little bit busy, but delightfully so.
Heck, I want to go into talk about, because we've talked about women and girls, on the modern gender roles and basically really the shared responsibilities of men and women. You know, we always had the traditional roles where the man was supposed to take care of the family, the woman was supposed to nurture the family, and our roles have changed and evolved. Not everyone has gone along with our changing roles and evolution. Where do you see us going? Because we are seeing so much being taken away and we're pushing through mountains and quicksand and so on to kind of get back to what we always had, but we still need to move forward. Where do you see us going?
You know, it's interesting. When in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, you heard a lot of men mouthing the words. Today, I'm seeing something very promising. I'm seeing it in my own sons. I see them in their relationships, that they really do take on the responsibility of sharing responsibility in relationship. Whether it's cooking dinner, and I'm not talking about taking out the garbage.
That's no.
I'm talking about sharing the wealth, sharing the jobs, sharing the children's care. I really see it happening. I didn't see it happening 10 years ago when they were talking about it. But I do see young men growing up to be part of their family.
And you know, so do I. And I have so many people who try to negate that. And a lot of people are not they're not opening their eyes to the fact that this is happening, that a lot of young people, your children, my children, and watching their friends and how they take care of their families and the fact that they do share the responsibilities, that it's not just, oh, you take out the garbage, that they actually share the responsibilities without having a list to say, this is what you do, this is what I do, and they just get together and do it without anyone having to ask.
You know, Sylvie, I love your positive approach here because we need positive. We don't want to talk about the negative. And when I see the young men of today truly sharing the lives of their families and their lives, you have to compliment them because their generation before did not do it. I do see it happening now, and I think it's more optimistic than not. I would be optimistic, and I share your emotion in this tremendously. I believe there are still men that are more conservative about that approach. They may talk it, but most young men I see are really sharing and participating in their family lives. And if they're not, get out.
Exactly. Okay. And that's the thing. I mean, instead of complaining about it, yes, you either sit down and educate or you get out. But we need more education and we need more positivity because I see so little of it, which really makes me so angry.
Well, I see the parenting happening amongst both sides. And again, if you have those oddballs that are not doing it, then you move sideways and you move away. Because sometimes it's easier to be one than it is to be two that are not in agreement. And I would like to talk a little bit about women and encouraging women, because one of the mottos I've always had in business, because I've met a lot of negativity, but I always believe no is just a delayed yes. And one of the items that have helped in my career is not taking no. No will become a yes. Sometimes it won't, and sometimes you have to give up and you have to know when. But most times, I think 8 times out of 10, a woman can turn that no around. We're very decisive. We get to the point. There's another point too, and I think we talked about this when you and I had a terrific lunch together. We were talking about women and the decisiveness that a woman has. A woman makes a decision because she can't wait when there's a cut knee or a child is sick. She has to go right in and take care of that child. You know, women menstruate, men have mental menstruations. We go right to it. We know how to deal with problems. And I really believe, as foolish it may sound, but there was a guy by the name of Winston Churchill.
You're kidding.
Yeah. Winston was asked to give the graduation speech at Eton, which is very, very formal. And these young graduates in their long tails and formal dress looked like a sea of penguins in the audience. And Mr. Winston Churchill got up, went to the podium, probably took out a cigar, and he stood in front of this audience and he said, "Don't give up." And then he sat down.
No truer words.
No. I just had a situation with my son in his yoga retreat. And I saw him have that wonderful quality of not giving up when he wanted to do this wonderful retreat in Montana for Lux Yoga. And he did not give up. He was rejected the first time. He didn't give up. We have to teach our children not to give up.
And you are certainly a role model in that because, I mean, you're just a role model in that because you've had a career from babysitting on forward of not giving up and of taking ideas and moving them forward and not listening to people say it can't be done. I mean, when your father told you really needed to go to school, you told him you already had a career. You were on your own career path.
What can they teach me? Probably a lot. But in the meantime, I passed a brokerage exam on Wall Street that was a 9-hour exam. And my husband said to me, oh, we knew you'd pass the second time. I passed the first time. And so if you have these abilities, and Wall Street was an education for me, it was a university education, it was in finance, and I carried that on to Alexander's, my own business and careers. And I believe that as a woman in business, we have to believe in ourselves. I believe as a woman in business, we can't depend on the F word, fear.
But I take that a little bit further, not only in business, but in our own personal lives.
Well, our bodies. Our bodies are ours.
Yes, they are ours.
Our decision, whether you believe in pro-life, whether you believe in abortion, whether you believe in life, it doesn't matter. It's your body.
Exactly.
That choice is yours. How can we be dictated to and told that some government or some people that are so prejudiced against women can make a decision for us? Yes, I worked for Planned Parenthood. And my kids said to me many years ago, you're working for Planned Parenthood with five children that you're caring for? I said, yes, but I believe in the loved ones. So any loved one I support. But when you see a 14, 15, and 16-year-old have a child, is that fair to the child or the baby? They're going to be right back where the mother was. So it's really important that we take care of teenagers and teach them how to protect themselves. We have to take care of women and let them make decisions for their life. Give them good advice, of course.
Yes.
And give them good and care and education. It's the most important thing.
Education is the most important thing. And we need to have autonomy over our own bodies. We can't have other people dictate, because women do not make rash decisions. They don't. Not when it comes to family and parenting and birthing. It's not a rash decision.
A mother wants to be able to take care of her child. A teenager needs to grow up. In each case, as you said, it's the woman's decision, and also along with her partner. It's
exactly.
Not some government agency to decide what you should do or not do. And then these children are born. Who's going to take care of them? They end up.
Haven't you heard? They can just be put up for adoption, because that's so easy for somebody to just give up someone that they've been carrying around for 9 months. I'm sorry to be so sarcastic, but I can't stand it.
Yeah. No, well, I understand how you feel. We feel similarly, because we've had the freedom to do what we can, and we should have the freedom to do what we are and who we are. I wouldn't tell a man to harm his body like that or make a decision like that, and I wouldn't tell a woman to do that. I'll help any woman that needs our help. We're here not only to make business bags for women, or to make beautiful accessories for the Girl Scouts and encourage their future, or to work for the Red Cross and promote giving blood. We have to be there for our families and for organizations that we believe where we can make a difference.
One of the other things that I know that you are very much for, and that is the value of making a mistake. I mean, I know that if you're perfect, you get nowhere, because there's no such thing. So tell us about how you've learned that making a mistake really can move you forward.
You know, mistakes are treasures in disguise. They're the unsung heroes of learning. Not only do pencils have erasers, but we have erasers. Every mistake I've ever made has been a wonderful gift. Some of them I've cried after, like maybe a marriage or two, but every mistake has been either a wonderful child that came into my life, or great experiences, or business mistakes, or opportunities. So let's embrace encouraging errors and not be embarrassed by them. Let's use them as our learning experience for the future. View mistakes as learning opportunities. They're stepping stones to the next right moment. I love a mistake. I don't like making them.
Well,
I resent myself for making them. I get angry with myself for making them, but I've learned something.
So what would you like your legacy to be?
Let's see. What would I like my legacy to be? I'd like to encourage these young girls, my children, my family, my friends, to remember me as doing something good. The word good is so simple, but doing something good would be pretty important. Also, that I'm a really good cook and I love making food and cooking for people, because to me, that's immediate pleasure. And I love immediate pleasure. I mean, there's nothing, cooking is like, it's just for people and for friends, and serving a beautiful meal, an hors d'oeuvre, a dinner, a lunch, the best scrambled eggs they've ever had, or the greatest pistachio or pasta or incredible pheasant, whatever it may be. The joy of when you bring that to a table and you fill people's minds and bodies with the joy of eating, what could be better? So get people around your table, whether it be in your office or your home or for a holiday or for every day. I am the greatest leftover queen that you can imagine. I'm really creative. And there's nothing better than going to that fridge and seeing what's left over and making something wonderful for someone. And being, it's just such joy to share food.
Well, Francine, you've shared more than food. You have shared a life that has so much more to be shared. And I thank you so much for taking the time. I know that if anyone wants more information and also to see the collection, it's Francine Collections.
Thank you.
And it has All About Francine on there. Mm-hmm. Francine, thank you so much again for doing what you are doing, not only what you've done, but what you continue to do every single day, and for your support of so many young women.
Sylvie, I think we could all learn something by listening to your podcast of the wonderful woman that you have been interviewing, and the obstacles and the humor and the sadness and the tears and the happiness that they've all, you know, shared with you. Keep it up. It's really important. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining me today. If you liked what you heard, please share it with another person you think would be interested. And if you haven't already, please subscribe.
This has been a Life of Prey production.